Hello, welcome to your meditation practice as part of the Open Heart Project. My name is Susan Piver, in case we haven't met. I'm very happy to sit with you. We're going to sit together for 10 minutes. We're going to start soon. So please get settled wherever you like, on a cushion on the floor or in a chair. Both are fine. And my knee is propped up in this case because I had a hip replacement surgery about 3.5 weeks ago. And I'm doing fine. So before we sit today, I want to share, hopefully, and I say hopefully because what I want to talk about is something I'm still working to understand myself. But this is my new obsession, I would say, and it is the notion of ritual. Why is ritual powerful? What is your personal ritual? Should you want to create one, what would it be? So it's ordinary and understandable to start meditation, a meditation practice, or to think of meditation as some kind of self-help. You want to sleep better, you want to have less stress, you want to be a better person, whatever it might be. Cool. Those are good things. And science has proven that it will happen. So thank you, science. But when it's just something on the to-do list to make ourselves feel better, or which is good, we all should feel better, or to accomplish an agenda, a lot of the magic that is possible in the practice goes away. But when we connect it instead to ritual rather than to-do list, the magic perks up and goes, oh, okay, now I have a place to land. So if you walk into a Buddhist meditation center, any meditation hall, I presume, a church, a temple, usually there is something in front, a table of some kind with things on it. Those things, you could say, are offerings. I have mine behind me. I'm happy to tell you what they are if anyone's interested. But you could have such a thing yourself. You don't have to have one like me or a church or anything like that. But if you have a little table in the area where you practice, wherever it might be, and you put a piece of cloth on it that's pretty and clean, and then you put on it something very simple, a picture of something or someone that inspires you, a candle or a stick of incense that you could light. As soon as you approach that place for your practice, the sense of ritual begins to arise. And why do we need these things? Or what are they for? Well, you could say that when you look at your table of offerings or offering, as the case may be, there's a sense of opening to liminal space in relating to a little shrine table. By liminal space, I mean the space between you and what's going on between your ears and what you seek. Wisdom, compassion, understanding, creativity, whatever it might be. These are things that we long for. And when we have a little candle or a stick of incense or whatever it may be, there's a sense of remembering, oh, there is something powerful here. There are inspiring beings. There's something more than what I might think about things, believe it or not. So it doesn't matter what's on your shrine table, should you choose to have one. What matters is that it's personal to you, and that when you approach it, you are sort of seeing, let's say, a picture of someone who inspires you with the sense of, I seek your guidance. I appreciate you and what you know. It starts to take you out of yourself in an intimate and personal way, because you admire the beings you admire for intimate and personal reasons. And when you light a candle, there's a sense, perhaps, or a stick of incense, of connecting with something elemental, something beyond these four walls and what is contained herein. So something to think about, something to experiment with. And I will tell you briefly what my ritual is. And you don't have to do any of these things, but I have a shrine, as you can see. Got a bunch of stuff on it. Picture of my root teacher, Tulku Tundup Rinpoche, and other images of things that inspire me, teachers, and then statuary of various kinds of Buddhas, most of which were given to me very kindly as a gift for some reason. And there are three little bowls back here with tea candles in them. And behind me is something wrapped in a piece of red brocade on an elevated stand. And that something, though it does not look to us like the form of a book, it is a book in Tibetan, and it's wrapped in a brocade, and it's elevated because that's the tradition. There's nothing higher than the Dharma, whatever the Dharma is for you. So it's the highest thing on the shrine. And then when I sit to practice, and you don't have to do any of these things, I chant certain things that are connected to the Buddhist tradition that I was trained in. And one of those things is called the Heart Sutra, or the Prajnaparamita Sutra, which I wrote a little book about, which will be out actually on January 29th. But for me, the Heart Sutra is a way of saying over and over again, in ways that I do not understand, even though I've been chanting it almost every day for more than 30 years, I want to know the truth. I want to understand my nature and the nature of reality. And I don't. Could you help me? That's my interpretation of what the Heart Sutra is saying. It is quite profound. So I say that as well as some other things. Then I do my practice. And then dusk, I do a little something else to sort of close my ritual for the day. In Tibetan Buddhism, it's traditional when day begins to turn to night to invoke something called the protector principle. Maybe you've seen images in Tibetan Buddhism, particularly of really scary looking entities with fangs and lots of heads, and maybe they're wearing a necklace of skulls or of some sort. Those are images of protectors or of the protector principle because they're not real, although the energy is quite real. And the protectors protect you against what? Ignorance. When should ignorance try to attack you or arise within you, according to the tradition, if you have a relationship with the protectors, they'll help you. If you're ignorant, they will not care for that, and they will turn against you in some way. And what I mean by that is not going to attack you or with knives or anything, but you're going to learn, you could learn a hard lesson. They can deliver very powerful lessons that are positive, and difficult lessons that feel negative at first. Anyway, blah, blah, blah. So at the end of my day, I say a protector chant. It's a traditional one. And then I say a closing chant that is hoping for the long life of my meditation teacher. These are very traditional steps. So for you, if you want to do this, you go back to your shrine table and you ask to be guarded and protected in whatever way feels natural to you. And if there are teachers or beings who you're grateful to, who you rely upon, you could rouse the aspiration that they will have a long, peaceful, healthy life. It could take a moment. You could spend hours doing it, it doesn't matter. But to have those aspirations, so you hope for the sources of protection to rally around you, and that your teachers or benefactors will be healthy and live a long life. Then I blow out these candles and throw them away and put fresh candles in there for tomorrow morning. So I call that closing the shrine. So it's not just open and, randomly willy-nilly trying to attract good juju or whatever a shrine does, but it opens when I begin my day, and it closes at the end of my day. And so that is a ritual. And on days when I do it, which is most days, my experience unfolds in a more dignified way, my experience of my day. When I don't do it, I feel a little untethered. So in the Open Heart Project and in the Open Heart Project Sangha, which you are warmly invited to join, one of the things that we do there and emphasize is we have a daily ritual. That's not my ritual. Everybody can make up their own ritual, but if you want help, I'll help you figure it out. That's one of the sort of tent poles of the Open Heart Project Sangha. And I think among the most important things that make it a community of spiritual practitioners rather than a community of, I don't know what to call it, people who are just trying to improve their lives, which is great. I hope you'll have all the improvements you want. But this is not only about that. It's about connecting over and over again with the liminal space, beginning with ritual. And there are other things that I can suggest to help you stay connected to the sources of magic, as I would call them, subjects for another conversation. So in the meantime, let's sit. So as we begin, rouse a sense of offering. And what I mean by that is you don't have to light a candle or do anything like that, but let there be a sense of I'm offering myself to the liminal space, to my practice, to wisdom beyond what my conventional mind can hold on to. Good luck to me. Have a sense of offering. And establish your posture by sitting up straight. If you have back or neck problems or hip replacement surgery, just find your version of straight for today. The hands rest on the legs, palms down. Feel the strength of your back body. It's very powerful. Even if it hurts or feels achy, whatever, it's still very, very strong. Feel that strength. And feel the softness of your front body. It is soft. Your belly, your soft heart, your throat. And if you try to find where the strength of the back body ends and the softness of the front body begins, of course you can't because they are inseparable. And this is a deep truth about you in general. Same time, you're just sitting there doing nothing, so no big deal. And let your shoulders relax. The mouth is closed, but the lips and teeth can be slightly parted to avoid any sense of tightness in the jaw. Breath is natural in and out through the nose, unless you have a cold, but otherwise, just breathing in and out through the nose as you have been doing since the moment you were born. The eyes are open so we can see into the liminal space, as it were, and be present and awake. And if you're visually impaired, just do this through the ears. Hear where you are. And the gaze is cast down and soft. This is our posture. And basically, the only thing that's going on is we're breathing. So let your attention rest on breathing. Provides a perfect anchor for meditation practice because you're doing it anyway. So let yourself come in on the inhale, like you're sort of riding a wave up the shoreline. And come out on the exhale, like the wave receding back into the ocean. Attention comes in and flows out. Your mind will continue to make thoughts because, of course, just like your eyes continue to see and your ears continue to hear and so on, there's no particular off switch. So just let that happen. Doesn't matter what you're thinking of right now. Thoughts can fall to the background, and breath can take up the foreground of your attention. And if you notice that you become absorbed in thought, not a thought, but a line of thoughts to the point where you're no longer aware of your breath. Oh, forgot about breath. That means I'm not meditating. Good. Notice that. You can label that silently thinking. That's thinking, not meditating. And then let go. Whatever the thought is, doesn't matter right now. I promise. Gently come back and begin again. Feeling the body breathe. Thank you so much for your practice. It's very important and magical. Thank you for practicing with me. I feel it. Thank you for practicing together. And if you have any reflections or questions or thoughts about ritual, your own, things that you have found helpful or may find helpful in the future, I would love to hear about them. You can comment here or you can email me at susan@susanpiver.com. Okay, till next time.